Hi guys, welcome back to your weekly Stoke City podcast, Every Step Along the Way. A very big week, we've got a lot of comings and goings. We'll look back at 3 points versus Hull, and of course we'll look ahead to that crunch tie versus Fulham this weekend. And welcome back to the pod. Dan, how are you, mate? You okay?
I'm all right. Thank you. After the week we've just had, very busy, wasn't it, for us? You
know? For anyone who doesn't know, and I mean, especially if it's your first time, then we had a podcast out last Saturday, wasn't it, mate? I think it was quite a special one that we did. We had Kieran Maguire, who is a financial fair play expert, effectively. And, you know, it really kind of blew up probably more than we actually thought it was going to. I mean, we thought it'd be a big interest to people, didn't we? But to kind of go off as it did, I know the local newspapers and stuff picked it up and stuff like that, and we were just sitting here like, that wasn't bad, was it? So
it was worth, you know, doing.
it was, but I think, you know, we always said when we did this, you know, when we do the pods and when we do these special bits, I mean, that we normally don't do it with any self kind of gratitude, if that's the right word, really. You know, we do it because we think other people will be interested in hearing it. But I think us, like a lot of Stoke fans, didn't really understand FFP very much at all. So I think for me, it was just a real good chat to understand exactly what it is, how close we were going to be to maybe breaking it. And some of the, I mean, I'll give you my takeaway, Dan, and then I'll ask you yours, mate. But my main takeaway from that, which was more of a shock, was around paying the £700,000 to a player's mum to get around financial fair play, you know, effectively hiring her as a, what was it, was a scout or something like that, wasn't it?
An academy scout.
An academy scout.
Because academy costs towards your FFP.
Exactly. I mean, it's a funny takeaway to have. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff, but geez, it makes you realize just how pointless of a bloody system it is if you can get around it like that. But what was your main takeaway from that? I mean, there was a lot of them, but what was your main takeaway?
I can just imagine the player going to his mom, can I have 20 grand out the bank?
I was going to say, because how do you transfer that across? Because that, I mean, a mum's going to have 700 grand going into a bank. The bank are going to call her up and go, what's this £700,000, please, Mrs. Ince? And also, yeah, she's like, oh, yeah, it's such and such. And I'd like to transfer it to my son, please. Like, that sounds so dodgy. So I'd love to know what they did there. But anyway.
I suppose she was paid weekly, maybe. But we don't know the ins and outs. Yeah. The main thing, there was just so much, one there. We sort of learned so much. And it was nice just to clarify a lot of things as well, things that I'd sort of pieced together from hearing bits. And I mean, as I said on that pod, I listened to Kieran's Price of Football podcast. And for anyone who found that really interesting, by all means, go and check that out. You know, listen to a couple of episodes, decide if it's for you, because it's really good. And yeah, we do thank you for taking the time out as well and coming on with us. But yeah, if anybody like listened to that and found it interesting, definitely, like I say, just give the Price of Football a listen, because it's a really good podcast. It dips into loads of different things, topical subjects and questions and everything. So yeah, definitely do that. But for what I took away, I think the main thing really is just like you say, how the figures can be. Like, we're allowed to lose, say, £61 million in the period, the FFP period that just ended, the last lot of accounts, yet our debt was more than double that, but we still managed to get within the rules once you take this, that and the other off. So it just shows, you know, that it's not as black and white as it seems, is it? And there's a lot more goes into. And I think, I mean, obviously, Tony Scholes has gone and said we're in a healthy position, so it obviously is, you know, the wage bill and the restructuring and everything else. And it's stuff like the amortisation of the contracts and how, like, the transfer fees, where the transfer fees get divided up amongst how long the contract is. And then if you give the player an extension, it then divides even further amongst the new contract, what's left. And it just sort of explains how we've ended up with certain players getting contracts. Why is he getting a contract? Are they other players? Or, you know, what's that? It's obviously just to keep the numbers within certain boundaries each year as they're going along. So obviously that's been Tony Scholes' positives that we've maybe not understood ourselves.
Yeah, and exactly. It makes you realise as well, when you see, and I suppose it's a food for thought for anyone now who sees any articles where it says, you know, Stoke are going to be docked points. The fact is that whoever reports that right now does not have a clue. That's what's kind of come out of that. They can take an educated guess, but there's accounts yet to come out. There's no one who knows other than probably Tony Scholes and the owners of Bet365 and obviously the club. They're the only ones who know realistically whether we're going to break it or not. So if you see any articles which says we're going to do this, going to do that, they're blowing in the wind, basically. There is no guarantees that they know anything at all. So don't start panicking and criticising Tony Scholes and criticising the club over what is probably quite inaccurate news, if you like. So, but yeah, if anyone hasn't listened to it, please go and listen to it. It's great. Great role. I've listened to it, Dan, twice myself. I just loved it.
The next 2 years are going to be tight, aren't they? Because we lose the year we were in the Premier League drops off, the amount we're allowed to lose shrinks as well. And also, as we're going along, we are dropping off years where we've had parachute payments. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why we're still... I think the season that's just ended... Now, the fact that Tony Scholes says we're in a good position would say to me that he must have looked over those accounts.
Oh, yeah. He's an accountant, yeah. He knows what he's doing.
He knows. So I'm quite positive that we are, you know, we've managed to scrape the right side of it there. And this season, I think, will also be another tight one. You'd like to think that, obviously, going forward after that, we're losing a lot of the outgoings that we paid, a lot of the transfer fees. You know, once we look into the end of next season. But again, those transfer fees, we've found out just because we spent 50-odd million in that summer, we don't lose that in one go, do we? We've just found out that that's spread out over, say, 4 years. So, yeah, it's all complicated. What you just have to do is sort of trust that the people in charge know what they're doing. And I'm sure they do. I'm sure that's why there's not been an appointment so far, that they want to make sure they get the right person who can come in and continue, you know, the sort of like, you know, on the basis of what's been happening so far.
Yeah. Not to expect a Tony Scholes replacement before the end of this season. That's not going to happen. So I think that's probably one thing to take out of it as well. So they'll be taking the rest of this season, as you said, Dan, to find the right person. You know, I know what's the name? Uncertainty always breeds rumours and stuff like that. But I don't believe that he'll be replaced until the end of the season. So we'll see how it pans out, mate, won't we?
I'm sure. Yeah, I know he's left the role and he's got to wait for the Premier League and that, but he's still got a phone, hasn't he? He's still the other end of the phone if somebody desperately, you know, needed any advice or whatever. I'm sure, you know, he's not going to turn his back completely, is he?
No, he's not. But yeah, so anyway, again, just to kind of cover that off, thanks again for everyone for listening. So Dan, let's speak about a certain game that took place on the Sunday. So Hull, I must admit, mate, I thought, I don't know about you, but I thought we were in control from start to finish, to be honest. There was a few hairy moments at times, you know, at the back where Hull, in fairness to them, really should have made more of their chances. But I'd never felt like we were in danger. But then neither did anyone when we were 3-0 up against Cardiff. So I never really felt in danger. But how good was Wright Phillips? I mean, for a player's professional, proper senior championship debut, that is one hell of a debut to make. I mean, the only thing missing was a couple of goals, which he probably deserved, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. I thought when he hit that one from the edge of the box, I just wish that had, you know, got smashed into the top corner there, because that had just rounded off a perfect debut for him there, wouldn't it? He was full of pace, he was full of energy. His movement was brilliant as well. Just now, he was always seemed to be in the right areas. And I think I think him and Brown linked up really well, didn't they? I think we've noticed that maybe like Campbell and Brown have struggled to get sort of a link up going between them. But he definitely sort of, Brown was doing a lot of runs and making space for Wright Phillips. And Wright Phillips then was just making the most of it when he got the ball. And I think we've said before, haven't we, that Brown's best work sometimes comes when he doesn't have the ball. And you know, we've had other strikers like that, you know, like people like Sidibe and even Jonathan Walters, you know, when he's played with certain strikers, have been unselfish and hardworking, and just their main job was create space for other people. Do you know what I mean? And you might not see the ball, you know, you might barely see the ball during the 90 minutes, but you can have a really big impact on the game just by your movement. And that seemed to be Brown's game at the weekend. I mean, he could have had a hat-trick after 20 minutes, couldn't he?
I don't think he did anything wrong with those chances, though. I think the keeper just did a good save and the defence bailed him out. I don't think we can turn around and go, well, Brown, you should have absolutely nailed it. I mean, some people will, obviously. But I don't think he could have done an awful lot more with those, personally.
No, I think maybe if he was more confident, feeling more confident, if he'd had a couple of goals lately, he may just, you know, burst the net with him or just, I think maybe like, yeah, if he was just, because we know he's not a natural goal scorer, is he? He's not a natural finisher. Somebody like, I saw comments, you know, if Tyrese was playing, we'd have been 3-0 up, and that might well have been the case, you know, but then, like you say, Brown's movements created so much more in how we were playing and that, and he did have a good game in that respect, definitely, and allowed, like I say, Wright Phillips to shine. And, you know, what a game he did have, what a debut. It was just nice to see that, you know, somebody's he's not been out on loan as such, has he? So we've not had those kind of reports coming in. He literally has gone in from zero and, you know, raw on a professional kind of level. And just produce that, and you think, wow, you know, what's this guy going to be? But I mean, what do you think, Mike, going forward? We're going to sort of talk later on about, you know, possible incomings for that, attacking wise. We've got a lot of attackers available. Would you loan him out for the rest of the season so that you guarantee him getting 20 games under his belt? Rather than in, say, a few weeks' time, if we've got a lot of strikers and whatever available, he might only see 5-6 games between now and the end of the season?
I mean, Wright Phillips, you mean?
Yeah.
He's got to stay in the team. I don't see how we can really drop the lad. I mean, he's just signed a new contract. You know, he's had a blinding couple of games. No, for me, mate, he absolutely has to stay. And I think he needs to just give him confidence. I mean, how, you know, Tyrese came out of nowhere, if you remember. Yet he was doing well in the under-23s, which has obviously got Tyrese's chance. But, you know, Ty came in and he was a bit of an unknown quantity, really, at that point, other than the fact, you know, of who his dad was and all that business. So, no, I mean, Wright Phillips, again, he could be another one of them that he just all of a sudden bursts onto the scene. And then we're talking about him being a 15, 20, 25 million pound player come next season. If he stays fit, obviously. And that's the one thing with our bloody squad, isn't it? It's not getting injured. but yeah, honestly, the signs were great, mate. I think the one bit that kind of sticks in my head as well, which is one thing I've not seen a player do at Stoke for a long time, is that, I can't remember, at one point, I think it was in the second half, the ball's played into him, he's controlled it, skipped round his men, and he's beaten three or four other whole players to try and get in, and they've had to take him out in the end. I don't remember the last time I saw a player do that. I mean, as close as you're going to get is probably a Tyrese moment.
To be honest, in Stoke minds, I don't know whether to say this, because in Stoke fans' eyes, it's a very, very big boots to fill. But when you're saying that there, I mean, I know what you're talking about. He was just inside their half once and he dropped the shoulder, so he shrugged off one. And he showed quite a good strength for such a small lad, didn't he? Knocked one sort of guy off the ball who came near him. He ended up on his knees. And then he sort of danced around two, three other players and just played a nice, simple ball out wide. Nothing too fancy. He didn't get carried away. You know, didn't think he was Maradona all of a sudden. Just, yeah, I've done my bit here, play the ball out wide. And it reminded me of Bojan
Oh God. Okay. Yeah.
In that kind, of low center of gravity, quick movement, dance around a couple of players, knock you out. I know, you're not his biggest fan.
Well, it's not that I'm not his biggest fan, mate. To be honest, we can probably discuss this another day. But it's not that I'm not his biggest fan. I just think he was well overhyped, to be honest. But either way, I know what you're saying, mate. You know what? Again, it's one of them, isn't it? I mean, he's going to get a lot of pressure put on his shoulders now. And I think the one thing we can probably not criticize him for, because the guy can't help it, but he needs to bulk out a little bit more. You can see him easily getting knocked off the ball. And it depends what type of a game we want to play. If we want to play where he's going to be going up for bloody headers and God knows what, then yeah, he's got to bulk up. But if he's going to play that little man running round, I mean, Bojan was obviously never the biggest, was he? But, you know, he didn't stop him creating things and getting around the pitch and being influential. So I think we'll discover him as time goes on. He'll develop. But I would like to see him bulk up a little bit, because he's going to get knocked off in this division a lot.
I don't think he's ever going to be going up for headers. He's the son of Sean Matt Phillips.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I saw that apparently that's what he did on the under-23s quite a lot. He was always trying to get involved, which is nice to see. But anyway, I thought Ryan Phillips was great. One final shout-out from me. I thought Allen and Klukas, in fact, the whole midfield did well. Ince did brilliant again. But again, Allen and Klukas have come in for a lot of stick recently, and I thought they were pretty solid. I can't remember them doing anything wrong in that match. So I think, you know, definitely worth calling them out, because everyone likes to give them stick, but I don't see many people trying to give them any credit when it's due sometimes. So, yeah.
I thought the midfield did have a very good game. Klukas just seems to love playing against former clubs, doesn't he? We should like loan him out to every club in the division maybe for a couple of games, and then every week he'll just have be in his bonnet.
Yeah, exactly that, mate. And you know, actually, I talked about some things as well, so I just want to bring this up. So we did obviously the Man of the Match poll as well, Dan, on the Stoke City from All Around the World Facebook group. So there's around 5,000 plus Stokies. So if anyone wants to join a bit of a community there, go and check out the group. But we gave them three options, and I'll be honest, mate, we could have given them a hell of a lot more than three, but we gave them Klukas, Jagielka, and Wright Phillips. So in third place is Sam Klukas. He got 19 votes. Second place was Jagielka, who actually surprisingly haven't mentioned. He was a solid game. So Jagielka was second with 43. And you won't be surprised if you do the maths that Wright Phillips won that one with a massive 407 positive votes. So a good 460 odd people voted on that one. And it was very, very similar on the Twitter as well, mate. So I'd probably say that that's a fair result. Would you put Jagielka second, Dan?
Yeah, I thought as debuts for 39-year-olds go, we couldn't really have any complaints. Thought he was brilliant.
Concrete, wasn't he?
Showed exactly, and he nearly grabbed himself a couple of goals as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
So if he's going to be, you know, when Mario's back and stuff as well, if he's going to be dangerous in the box at the other end, that could, you know, that's an added bonus as well.
It's been long enough since we've had a defender who can actually score goals, and it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Harwood Bellis had a solid game. Nothing. I noticed there was I did notice early on, he got nutmegged. And it showed to me like the standards that he holds to himself, because he got nutmegged and he turned around immediately and he didn't chase after the man, or he didn't, you know, look up at the sky or look at the floor or whatever. He immediately spun around and he saw that I think Joe Allen had come across to cover the man who'd megged him. So he straight away went in and picked up Joe Allen's man.
Yeah.
And I thought it was clever. It showed great awareness for such a young player. But also, as soon as the ball went out, he was sort of, you saw him like, he jumped in the air and threw his fist like, as if he was really annoyed with himself that he'd been caught out. And it showed to me, like, you know, his standards are obviously really high for himself. Yeah. And he's thinking, you know, I don't want... And it just... I mean, I'm not beating out because, you know, you said it earlier on, and you whole had a few opportunities. They did seem to fall back post on James Chester's side. But he did, other than that, other than picking people up there, And you could argue that maybe at the time he maybe could have come across a bit more or whatever. He did have a pretty, he had his best game for a while, I thought, Chester. But when you see that James Chester, maybe Danny Bart as well, when they make a mistake or thing, it's more like they're looking resigned to that fact, like, oh, that's the best I could do and look what's happened. Whereas he's sort of young and he's, well, that's not going to happen again. I'm going to be better than that. I need to be better than that. Whereas they're sort, you know, it's that sort of the other end of the scale, isn't it, that they look resigned that they can't stop those things happening.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly also, that, mate.
What a leap he has on him as well, Howard Bowes, because he's not the tallest, but he gets up high for these headers and stuff.
The Ronaldo of the defence.
I think, like I said, I think the did you notice the second goal as well? It was a great tackle from Chester. Won the ball and anticipated the pass really well. Yeah, it was a good sort of block tackle. Got in before the ball got to the attacker. So then he obviously went to Klukas. He's got great vision there. He's pulled it back and Ince has, you know, stuck it in the corner, hasn't he? So what's all that? Chester, Klukas and Ince. Three ex-Hull players.
Yeah, and three players that you would probably say that most fans wouldn't have wanted on the pitch a few weeks ago. Don't get me wrong. Let's not pretend that Hull are a Fulham. Do you know what I mean? But you can only beat what's in front of you. It was still the typical Stoke banana skin that we could have easily gone and lost that type of game. Right now, it's in the 90th minute and Hull are beating Blackburn 2-0. So this is the Championship, innit? Exactly that, mate. So, yeah, it's crazy. I'm not going to go on to that. We'll go on to Fulham later.
One more thing I'd just say as well is like Lewis Baker, very promising 20 minutes from him when he came on. Thought he was tenacious. He got stuck in. He uses his body well, like physically when he's challenging for the ball. And he burst forward a couple of times, had a couple of shots, didn't he? Do you know how many shots we had on? So I cannot remember a Stoke side having this many shots in a game. We had 22 shots at goal.
Bloody hell.
I never remember a Stoke side having a shot every 4 minutes in a game.
No, I didn't realise it was that many.
Yeah, but I think as well, the first thing Baker did was there was a cross came in from the Hull left. So, like, you know, Tommy Smith's side, our right side. And he got himself in the perfect position where the ball came in and he just got a toe on it. He went back to the keeper. But I just looking at his position in there and he just automatically took up that. That was the first thing he did when he came on the pitch. And I thought, yeah, you've got the right mindset for that position. If he's going to play in front of the defence, he knows that's exactly the perfect area to go because you're stopping the cross coming in there and anything loose. He's got, you know, he's covered the wing back if he gets past him. He's just right distance in front of the centre halves to not be, you know, sort of in their way kind of thing and stop them challenging for any headers or anything. He's sort of picked up a really nice position and he obviously knows what he's doing there. So that all bodes well as well.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. But it'd be interesting to see if he gets in straight away in the Fulham match or not, to be honest with you. It'll be interesting because there's going to be a bit of moving around, I think, realistically. So, I can't disagree with anything you've said, mate. Cool. Well, I think that pretty much covers the whole game. I know we could kind of go on for a bit longer with that one, but we've covered the main areas, Dan. So let's move on to the Stoke City news this week. Okay, then. So just to kick off the news this week. So it feels a bit strange talking about them, to be honest, Dan, because they've already played a game for us. But the kind of Jagielka and Baker in particular, obviously signed for us after our kind of original podcast recording. And as we've all kind of seen them once rather, we all kind of know exactly what to kind of expect in theory. But Dan, yeah, so obviously Jagielka, we briefly mentioned him just about his performance and stuff like that at the weekend. So, again, I think what you said, he was very kind of controlling, you know, really, really well played. I think a lot of people were thinking, oh, we don't really need defenders. We don't need this. We don't need that. What was your general feeling on Jagielka, mate? Were you quite, obviously, I know you were quite impressed with him, but do you think that's a position that you're kind of glad we've kind of plugged the gap in, or would you have not signed Jagielka? Is that, what's your overall thoughts about him?
No, I was actually really happy with the signing when it came through. I think looking sort of online, there seemed to be two camps, weren't there? There was the great experience, going to be a great leader, part of the Derby, you know, defence that's doing really solid and tight all year, and is doing really well in you know, really difficult circumstances. And that was in that camp. And then there was the other side, which was just sort of like, why are we signing 39-year-old defenders? Which I do understand, but at the same time, I think in a back three, if you're in the centre of a back three and you've got youth and pace around you, you can sort of get away with that, especially if you are coming down the leagues a bit. You know, let's not forget, Phil Jagielka has played, what was it, about 40 times for England?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you know what I mean? He's got, what, 400-odd Premier League appearances. He's got a lot of experience. And as a centre-half, and I put a tweet out the other day saying, you know, the first 2-3 yards are in your head as a centre-half. You know, and you, as your legs go, you pick that up. So he's, for me, he was a no-brainer, especially as well. We've sort of needed leaders, haven't we? I think, we have, you know, that, yeah. Remember that Cardiff game where it just sort of went and like bang, bang, bang. And I know the defence has been a lot tighter since then, but you still have that worry, really, that, you know, how many times have we been 1-0 up and lost 2-1 because we don't seem to have people on the pitch who are capable of, you know, just sort of directing traffic when things are going against us and turning the tide back. You know, it's like,
yeah, even going down and disrupting the game, you know, yeah, pretending to be like, injured, just experience, isn't it?
Yeah, if the opposition have got momentum, it's like we all sort of, we seem to, you know, metaphorically, we're running around like headless chickens with panicking. And it's like, you just need somebody calm and assured, experienced. It's like, right, you stand there, you play, you mark him, you go close to him, you make sure you're this side of that. And it's just boom. And then all of a sudden it's like, right, okay, and now breathe and let's carry on. I think he's obviously going to do that role. He's going to have the respect of the dressing room as well because of obviously everything he's achieved. So yeah, I think it's a no-brainer for me. He's not going to be on big money either.
No, I was going to say that he's going to be quite cheap, isn't he? Because Derby haven't exactly been able to pay a lot of money, have they? For obvious reasons.
Not at all. And you know, for somebody like him, if he's, like I say, he is dropping down from where he's played the majority of his career. So you know, that tells me he's probably doing it for the love of it. You're not telling me he needs the money, kind of thing. He's doing it because he wants to carry on playing football, and he's enjoying it.
Yeah, and in fairness, I mean, would he have got a bigger club than Stoke in terms of the Championship? A team who actually needs that position? Probably not, to be honest. I don't know how many people in that top eight. Got the location. You know, he knows we're a good club. We've obviously got a manager who clearly is interested in him. So, yeah, I think it's a good signing, mate, for the exact same reasons that the kind of you've touched on, to be honest with you. And I must admit, a lot of us didn't really know too much about him before he came. I think, as you rightly point out, you know, we knew that he was part of a Derby team who, before all this hullabaloo again that's going on, we were all saying there's no way that they're going to go down. But, you know, that obviously could change very much now. But either way, you know, I think we always like to kind of reach out to obviously people to try and get some kind of negatives and positives about them, things that we don't really know. So basically, Corey from the Rams Review podcast gave us his thoughts in terms of what we should expect from Jagielka. And I think it's quite interesting. He gives a kind of an overview of generally one of his weaker areas, but also quite a lot of strengths. So I think they're very sorry to see him go, Dan. So let's have a quick listen to see what he had to say anyway.
Hey there, Stoke fans. It's Corey from the Rams Review podcast, where we talk all things Derby County. hopefully once a week, but sometimes twice a week. It's all a bit grim at the moment and whatnot. But anyways, here I'm here to talk about Phil Jagielka. So thank you for every step along the way asking me to come on and give some thoughts on Phil Jagielka. I think when he was signed in summer, he kind of thinking 39-year-old center half. God, Darby's really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. But it's been really clear since Phil's come in that 6-month period of time that he emerged as a very key player for Darby. And to be honest with you, when he departed last week, I know Darby were going to offer him rumored an 18-month extension, but that obviously got kicked in the head, which is why he's joined you guys. But I was absolutely gutted to lose him as a 39-year-old. He's an absolute Rolls Royce of a defender. What are you going to get? You're going to get somebody with massive leadership qualities, with massive amounts of ability and talent and class, and that'll ooze through despite his age. His strengths, I mean, he marshals a defense very well. He's very vocal, very good in the air, and very good in a tackle. Sometimes, weakness-wise, he can get caught out a little bit with pace, but that's not been too often that we saw with Darby because his positioning, again, was so good. But on the few times that he does get caught out, you know, you have a quick fullback or quick midfielder that can come back and make that recovery run, or the other center half can come over and clear up that danger quite easily. So I think for Phil, you know, it's a good move for him to get back into the championship Stoke as quick as possible now that he's in the twilight of his career. But us as Derby supporters and us as a Derby podcaster kind of are gutted to lose him because he was an instrumental part in our great defensive record so far this season, which has otherwise obviously been bleak. But wish him all the best, and I hope to see him continue on, because I think if Darby were going to offer him an 18-month contract, he's obviously got a lot more miles in the tank. So hopefully you guys see the best of him. Hopefully he does well for you. All the best. Thanks a lot for allowing us to come on and everything like that. But really appreciate the opportunity. And Phil Jagielka is going to be a massive, massive player for you. So we wish Phil all the best. We wish you guys all the best the rest of the season. And I hope that we can speak again next season. If hopefully we're in the same division or even have a football club. So thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity. And until next time.
Yep, cheers for that, Corey. Much appreciated, mate. So it sounds like to me, Dan, that they're very sorry to kind of see him go. And as he kind of pointed out, you know, if obviously 39 years old, if he didn't have much left in the tank, like Corey said, then they wouldn't have been trying to offer him another 18 months. So he's obviously a very fit 39-year-old who can go on for some time.
Yeah, and it's also nice for him, isn't it, that his career's come full circle. He's back at the club where he first started out as a schoolboy. And then obviously as well, I mean, his brother passed away, didn't he, last year? And obviously his brother was a few years ahead of him at Stoke and obviously played for Stoke as well. So it's maybe nice for him as well. Something like that, you never know, do you? Just maybe sort of ticks a box in his head.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. So I'm intrigued to see how he gets on this season. I think he'll definitely be a positive. Can't see any problems there. And obviously, say Baker again, someone, as we know, we've just signed, of course. I'm trying to think, Dan, actually. Baker, how long was the deal again? Was it 2 years?
Two and a half years,
yeah. So again, obviously, a player I didn't actually know an awful lot about. I know we tried to sign him permanently, I think there was the other season, and I think it was one of them that just kind of went quiet, so I'm not sure whether FFP reared its head at that point, which meant we, you know, obviously we had to pay a fee for him to get him out at that point, and obviously maybe that just wasn't viable, but obviously he got his man in the end anyway. And like we said earlier, you know, the brief cameo was pretty solid, but I mean, where do you see Baker's position, Dan? Because we all know he's one of them kind of like defensive kind of box-to-box midfielders. So when we've got Mario fit, when we've got Powell fit, when we've got, you know, Klukas, and we've got Allen, and we've got Sawyers, that's a lot of midfield middle spots. And I know that feels a long way away because of injuries at the minute, but it's not going to be. So what are we doing in that midfield? What do you think, or shall we say, what do you think O'Neill will do in that midfield?
Yeah, I mean, I think we mentioned there, didn't we, in the whole game there, in the review of that, that he's the positions that he took up when he came on straight away. And I think that shows that naturally his best position is probably going to be sort of that defensive midfield area, sort of, you know, shadow, you know, protecting the back five, if you like. And yeah, I can see him playing there. He's got that nice burst forward, something we saw from like Romain Sawyers, where he can sort of can get in a sort of a bit of a groove carrying the ball and go past people as well. So I think him and Sawyers are probably going to be vying for that position there. He's going to be, to me, he's going to be adding more stability defensively, definitely, than Sawyers does. It's whether he can actually going forward, but from what things I've seen, he's very good going forward as well. I wouldn't tag him definitely as a defensive player, but it's obviously that's really what, you know, anyone can look good in these YouTube videos. It's what I'm physically going to see, isn't it? But yeah, yeah, definitely.
I can see. Oh, sorry, go on.
He definitely, I think he's, like you said, I wouldn't pigeon him all into any role as such, but I think that's where we'll be using him straight away. But I think if you wanted to push him further forward, I'm sure he could play that role as well.
Yeah, I will play in the exact same position as you. I guess he's just going to move Joe Allen and co further forward, really, which I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or not with Joe Allen. It's a bit of a strange one. I've got nothing overly bad to say about Joe Allen, but I still find myself not knowing where his best position is, if I'm honest with you.
I don't think we know anybody knows, do they? It's no. Anyway.
This is where I'm going to butcher somebody's name, and I apologise. Someone's going to laugh at me here, right? So I've seen the report today that 19-year-old Philogene Badace, if that's how he pronounced his name, is apparently about to arrive on loan from Aston Villa. We've been watching him for some time, according to the reports anyway. And he's a young striker, isn't he? He plays for Villa. I can't say I know an awful lot about him, Dan, to be honest with you. The one thing, however, and I'm sure you may have potentially some stats about him, but one thing I want to ask you really about another striker signing. I do use and emphasise the word another. Now, we obviously haven't got a prolific goal scorer as such right now, despite the amount of strikers we have, but Sam Surridge, the guy's not clearly, I don't know what's going on, but he's not settled in. He's not really playing the cup games. He almost feels like he's not. You're blowing your full-time whistle, are you, Dan? So it sounds like you're not even. Is there a place for Surridge? I mean, is this? I can't figure that one out, mate. And if we're about bringing another striker in, surely that pushes Sam even further down the pecking order.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't bode well for him, does it? I mean, the lad we've been watching, I'm not surprised, because we remember in our under-23s lost 8-0 to Aston Villa. He got himself a hat-trick and an assist that day as well. So I'm sure that's maybe where he came on the radar.
Hopefully we've not just watched him once like Mbula, mate, because we all know how that one panned out.
But I'll be honest, I have not seen him play. I know nothing about him, apart from I've seen today that basically any club in the Championship would want him. So if that's the case, then he's a welcome addition, because he's going to be another exciting talent to bring in, isn't he? Another, him and Wright Phillips it's good to have these youngsters in and around the side. It gives everybody a lift. It's exciting for the supporters as well. Let's just hope that he makes a bigger, impact initially than maybe Jack Clark and Rabbi Matondo did last year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, mate. I don't know what it is with Sam Surridge, mate. I can't figure it out. I mean, he obviously didn't get too far at Bournemouth. He's come here, got off to a flyer, and all of a sudden doesn't even seem to be. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to be firing, and it doesn't even seem to be clearly doing well enough in training to get himself starting cup games against Leighton Orient and co. So I don't know. We'll see what will happen in January, but I really can seriously see Surridge leaving. I think, again, it comes down to FFP.
Yeah, he didn't play. He didn't play for Bournemouth at the start of the season, so he's only played for us. So we can sell him or loan him out, and he can play for somebody else this season. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Like I said, there's going to be a lot of competition up there. And I think if we get to the end of the window and we've brought in this young player from Aston Villa, or if
what's
not him,
his name,
somebody
Dan?
Else.
What's his name?
I'll Master it by next week. How about that?
You're going to YouTube it now for someone just to say his name, aren't you? It's not bloody cheating. Sorry, carry on.
I'll see if Alexa knows. She can teach me. if we get him in or another attacker between now and the end of the window, I think Surrey's out will be one of those. The manager won't want to commit to it early, but when there's clubs scratching around for transfers, last-minute deals, and they're a bit desperate, it wouldn't surprise me for the phone call to go in. And even if they did, you know, who have you got available at Stoke up front? You've got a lot of strikers, or any of them available. And it might be Sam Surridge, whether that be a loan, you pay all his wages, is on loan, and, you know, decent loan fee, or whether it's a permanent transfer. Yeah, I can see him leaving because, like you say, he's not sort of going to be getting much game time as it stands. And I think it maybe has been a little bit odd, done to, really, because I think he's only started half a dozen games this season. He's got himself, is it four goals? He scored four goals in six games, and that's league and cup. And you just think, yeah, he's never really had that run. And for a striker that's based on, you know, he is a goal poacher kind of thing. His game's all about being the, you know, he's not much in the link up and stuff. He just relies on service, and he'll get himself in the right area and get his shots in. They're usually the kind of strikers, aren't they, that require, you know, a little bit of a run of games to get themselves sort of in the zone kind of thing. So I do feel for him a bit there, but at the same time, when we've got as many options as we have, you aren't going to get a run of games if you're not performing.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I think people will be very happy because Danny Bart or Bath with one T, Bath with two T's. I think people don't have to worry about that one anymore, mate.
Bart. He's got. Have you not seen his Twitter bio?
Yes, I'm fully aware of his Twitter bio. I'm just thinking for all the people who keep misspelling his name and keep pronouncing his name, you don't need to worry anymore. He's basically left today. Of course, he's gone to Sunderland. I believe he's taken quite a hefty pay drop to go to Sunderland as well. So clearly a player who isn't in it for the money anymore. He's probably got more than enough money to last him and his kids and his kids' kids long enough. So he's clearly dropped down to get game time. I thought it was really weird because when he was left out at the weekend, everyone was like, is it COVID or what is it? How has he been dropped for Chester and all that? And I think had Danny Bart been available, I don't think he would have been played. Chester wouldn't have been played over Danny Bart. But I think it was very interesting to see him go so quick. It's clearly been bubbling for a few weeks, no doubt. And, you know, people were saying, you know, today when it was announced, you know, why is it not Chester instead? And let's be honest, the simple answer to that is because nobody bloody wants Chester. That's why. you know, so Bart's still obviously got a lot to offer. And I think in somewhere like, you know, League One, where it's going to be a bit more rough and tumble, it's about just getting your head on the ball, physicality, not having to play out from the back every 5 seconds that we have to play here, really. He's probably going to thrive at Sunderland. I'm sure he'll probably end up being their player of the season by the end of it. I think that suits him really well. And Dan, I know that there was a comment that you made to me earlier on, mate, about Danny Bart and how he was received, or how his sale was received by people. So I will let you make your comment now on that, because it's a very fair comment. When we saw him at Blackpool, we put him at our man of the match poll. And what do you remember, before we even left the stadium, someone was calling us out saying, what game did you watch? He was a load of crap. He'll do nothing. So I'll let you carry on the comment.
Yeah, so I remember that last season when we were playing the back three and we didn't really have the best players for us, but obviously Michael O'Neill was sort of using sort of the second half of last season when it became apparent that we weren't good enough to get in the playoffs. He was using that to work out who was suitable for this system because that's what he wanted to play going forward. Now, Harry Suter was the centre of that back three and Danny Bart was playing on one side, which means obviously he's not then, he's going to be dragged out to the wide areas. And it's a very different position playing on the right or the left than it is in the middle. We said at the same throughout this season, if he's going to play, he needs to play instead of Suter. Suter's far superior to him, so he's going to have to wait, and it's only going to be injury that's going to bring him into the side. And that's what happened. And when he came inside in the centre, that's a perfect role for him, and he played well. And he did. He's played really well. But we've had people saying, like, oh yeah, he's what, you know, why are we selling him? Why? He's a brilliant player, 100% fantastic, never let us down. He's always played well. All I'll say is, if you go and type in, go into search engines, Twitter, whatever, and type in Bart, not good enough, and you will see comment after comment after comment from the end of last season when he was being played to that opposition, and everyone's saying, I hope he never puts the shirt on again. He's not good enough. Get him out of our club. He's not, Danny Bart's not even trying anymore. He's a disgrace. Why is he still playing? It's what it's funny how, like, if Danny Bart plays next season, then Michael O'Neill needs to be sacked. I saw that one earlier on when I was looking to him. It's like, and then 6 months down the line, he's now being, why are we selling him? He's the best, you know. He's always been fantastic and all this. He's always give 100%. But it's funny how people have a go at players, and he, like I say, he's being played out of position. His stats here, 101 starts, 6 sub appearances, 6 goals. And I'll tell you what, them 6 goals, some of them were vital, especially when we had that project restart. He came, he scored, I think he scored, is it 3 in 4 games? And they were really important goals that helped us to move away from the relegation zone.
He did typical always give 100%. Fans.
Yeah, he did always give 100%. He always tried his best, but sometimes he was played in positions that didn't favour him and didn't suit the kind of defender he is. Played to his strengths. He was fantastic. Just don't ask him to sort of distribute the ball like a Harry Suter would or a Ben Wilmot would, because that's not his game, and he's going to run into trouble, and that's what happened. People are asking why Chester's gone, why Chester's still here, sorry, and Bart's gone. I would say it's mainly due to FFP, the wages, getting that wage bill. We benefit a lot more from getting Bart off the wage bill than we do Chester.
I was going to say, Danny's again, it's reported, but Danny was on about 24 grand a week. Obviously, that's without appearance fees, that's without goal scoring bonuses, clean sheet bonuses. So, yeah, he probably wasn't a very cheap hire, to be honest, mate. He probably is on more than James Chester, believe it or not.
Danny Bart was one of, obviously, he's one of the few remaining ones now from that period, isn't he, when we were just flashing the cash and just throwing it around trying to get promoted. You know, you look at probably Sam Clucas, Joe Allen. There's not really Tommy Smith. That's probably the three, I'd say. I can't think of anybody else who were first teamers at that time. You know, the Gary Rowett era, if you like.
Yeah, we did really well with that money, didn't we?
Tom Ince. Tom Ince as well.
Yeah, Tom Ince. But like I say, mate, again, got nothing bad to say about Danny. I thought he was pretty solid. Didn't do anything special, but as you said, there's a few crucial goals at the right time. So good luck to him anyway. I'm not sure if we'll ever see him back at the stadium because Sunderland is some way away, but who knows. And then just very quickly, a couple of other leavers that have been mentioned today. So Tom Edwards was an interesting one. I think I'd be a bit surprised if he's going, but the rumour is that he's going to go for $1 million to New York Red Bulls, I think it was. So, you know, there's potentially a deal there. Again, is this just us having an offer for a player who isn't necessarily, you know, an absolute must keep, and we've got a chance to get wages off the book and what is probably 750 grand, I guess, by the time you've done the conversion. So maybe that's part of that. And then again, I'll couple that with Davis, who apparently is a target for Sheffield United as well. Thing before we close out this new section, obviously a very big potential lever, which I'll be surprised, but obviously everyone's heard about it now, Tyrese Campbell. So again, for anyone who has missed it, apparently Burnley want him, having obviously just pocketed 25 million for the chap that's gone to Newcastle. So I mean, people were saying, you know, Ty, a couple of comments, and I think you picked up on, Dan, you know, Ty hasn't done great since he came back. And I think he's, what was it, scored three and six?
Yeah,
three, I think Tyrese.
Three goals and six starts.
There you go. So that's not too bad. And I think, you know, what would it take for Stoke to accept a bid? I know there's 15 million quid flying around. For me right now, I don't think that would be a good value deal. I know, again, we bang on about FFP, but that would obviously clear that issue up. I get it from that
I
side.
I hope so.
But purely from you bloody well hope so, wouldn't you? But from a footballing perspective, again, if we want to be fighting at the top end of that division, you don't want a striker who, since he's come back from a long-term injury with a one and two, a goal every two games as a ratio, you don't want to be letting that type of a player go.
No, definitely not. I mean, people, it was said once, like, you know, he's not the player that he was before his injury. He's not contributed to games. He's not sharp. And I think I made the point to somebody as well that Rory Delap, I remember when he broke his leg and he came back from that and he missed the pre-season. And he came back and he spent the rest of that season playing catch-up because he wasn't as sharp. And you're playing games and you don't look mobile, you don't look sharp, you don't look fit, you don't look agile, because you're not really in comparison to the other 20, you know, the other 19 outfield players on the pitch. And it's only when you know, if we could have afforded to say, Tyrese Campbell, you are going to do your own pre-season, you're going to play, you know, you're going to be running up hills for, you know, 3 weeks, and then you're going to be doing this fitness training, and we're going to stick in four or five friendlies, and then you'll come and start playing the first team. I'm sure he'd look a damn sight sharper and fitter. But the fact is, he's playing the Championship where you play game after game after game, one after another, and he's struggling to get, you know, struggling to get that match sharpness. And then you've got training grounds being shut and being opened back up again. And so it's not an easy period for anybody at the minute, but especially coming back from a long-term injury, it must be a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But let's say a bid comes in. At what amount in January right now, you're Peter Coates, what amount of money would you accept? Would you say, Luke, you've got 25 million for that player, we think Tyrese is worth at least that, so we want 25 million quid or he goes nowhere.
We should really, if they just sold Chris Wood for 25 million, we should do what other clubs do and say, you know, well, we know you've got the money. If you want him, if he keeps you up in the Premier League, he's worth 100 million pounds. So we want 30.
Yeah.
Plus add-ons.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, plus add-ons. If you stay up, we want, or 25, another 5 if you stay up. Another 5 if he plays for England, you know, just those kind of deals. However, the flip side of that is Burnley know full well or are going to be thinking Stoke City are not in a position to be turning down big bids.
See Tyrese wanting to go there, mate, either. I mean,
back in
Burnley
the
are very likely to come
time.
Back in the Championship. Yeah. So, I mean, are they even going to want to pay 20 million, 25 million for a player that could be a Championship player in? I don't know. Maybe it's just a lazy link, mate. Maybe we'll see. I don't see him going.
He has been linked with, you know, he was linked with Newcastle, wasn't he, as well, other week? And he has been linked with a few clubs. I think it's just that obviously they see this player who was, you know, lighting the Championship up last season before his injury, and all these rumours would have been coming around last January and last summer, wouldn't they, if he hadn't been injured. So I think maybe it's just them going, right, okay, Burnley need a striker. Who are the top Championship strikers? And straight away, Tyrese Campbell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine, mate. Well, we'll see. I don't see him going anywhere. But we'll certainly see in the next 2 weeks. So cool. I think that pretty much ties up the new section. So let's head into the Fulham preview.
So, yeah, so we welcome Table Toppers Fulham to the Bet365 Stadium on Saturday. So, I mean, are you looking forward to this one, Mike?
I am, mate, to be honest. I think it's going to be tighter than we probably all actually think in our heads. I think our hearts are saying, oh, we're gonna give them a good game. But I'm looking forward to it, mate. I'm not going to say this is going to decide how good or bad we are, because Fulham are like romping home the goals right now. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, mate.
Okay, so you say Fulham are romping home the goals. I'm going to give you some stats now. I love some stats, don't I? So let's go.
Mr. Stato, yep.
So they have scored 19 goals in the last three games. 19-3. They've got 70 so far this season, which is a record since the EFL was rebranded. And it was like the Championship came in. That's a record for this stage of the season. And they are on course to be the first club to get 100 goals in a season.
Wow.
No team has scored six... no team has scored six goals or more in three consecutive games since the 1950s.
Oh, what a great town to play Stoke.
Right. However... Now, do you want some more positive stats? Now, they're all the negative ones. These are the positive ones. Before this run of three games, in their six games previous to that, they didn't win any of them over 90 minutes because they had a cup game that they won 1-0 in extra time. And in them six games, they only scored three goals in total. So they've gone from scoring three in six games and not winning any of them games to scoring 19 in three. So they're not, you know, that's 22-9, still a decent record, but there's, you know, there are flaws there. They seem to have hit in a purple patch at the minute. It's whether they can carry it on.
Yeah, and let's now, be honest, mate, as well. I'm sorry to jump in there, but those games you're on about, those six goal wins, they're against Reading, Bristol and Birmingham. They're hardly Stoke, Bournemouth and whoever, Middlesbrough.
Yeah. Also, they might be more potent now, but they're also more vulnerable. So in the last two games, they've only conceded one less goal than they did in the last 13 games before that combined. So they've conceded four goals in the last two, but in the 13 games before that, they only conceded five. So although they're scoring more, there's also gaps to be exploited. And like you say, if Birmingham can get a couple of goals, Bristol City have got a couple of goals against them, then, you know,
yeah. Well, and that's away from home.
Now, these are really good stats. The head-to-head at Stoke, eight of the last nine games have been won. The head-to-head versus Stoke, sorry. Eight of the last nine games have been 1-0. How good's that? So there's been four Fulham wins and four Stoke wins in the last nine games, that have each been 1-0. And then there was a goal of a Stoke win in both teams to score as well. However, at Stoke, Stoke have won six of the last seven meetings, including the last four.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we were in good stats. And now, yeah, how to say that Alexander Mitrovic makes them a one-man team without actually saying he does, because I know that, you know, the goals come from everywhere, don't they? And they score, you know, and they've got all these different players, you know, Carvalho, Bobby Reid, all, you know, a lot of players score goals for Fulham and contribute to their wins. And so people say, oh, you know, even if you take Mitrovic out, they still score, they still win games. Well, how about this, right? Alexander Mitrovic has scored in 17 games for Fulham this season. They've won 15 of them and drew two. So they're unbeaten when he has scored. He hasn't scored in nine games. They've drew four, lost four, and the only game that they've won when he hasn't scored is last night.
Ah.
So
Croggy, yeah. In the first 5 minutes, somebody just go through the back of him and hurt him.
So, although, yeah, they may have many other players, and last night they didn't really need him to, by the looks of it, as he won 6-2 and he didn't score. Throughout the rest of the season, the stats would say Mitrovic scores, they win. Mitrovic doesn't, and they don't win. Now, his record versus Stoke, his career record, he scored one goal in five games. That one goal was at Craven Cottage earlier this season, but he also had a penalty saved by Bursic in the same game, didn't he? So he's not got a great record against Stoke either.
Right, okay.
So I'm just pumping the positivity in there. I'm just giving people hope. Just,
yeah. You know, well, I was going to say, my prediction later, mate, would have been Stoke 1, Fulham 0. So, it's weird, right? Because I said earlier on Twitter the other day that if you're going to have a bet on the Stoke game this weekend, you'd be stupid not to have over 2.5 goals because you'd be practically buying money. But how Stoke would it be to go and win the game against Fulham and lose to Coventry in the week? Wouldn't that just be Stoke all over?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but no, some good stats, mate. Yeah, I've always thought, you know, with Mitrovic, I wondered how many they'd actually won without him. So very interesting. I mean, what do you think is going to happen to the Fulham game? I mean, I'm definitely going 1-0 myself, despite the fact that I think we should all have a bet over 2.5. But yeah, I think 1-0. Are you being that positive, or are you still going for a Fulham win? Or
no, I think we'll win. Yeah, I really do. I even think maybe 2-0. And I'm not saying like, you know, well, we're just going to walk in. I just think we played so well last week, and we've got new faces in. Everyone seems to have upped the level. And I think now they upped the level at Hull. They got the result, but the confidence is up. I mean, Tom Ince is like a player reborn, isn't he? It's like a new signing. And obviously the Fulham coming to town, I think they'll keep that levels up. They'll have been looking forward to this game all week. And, you know, I think if we hadn't to beat Hull last week, they'd have been dreading this game all week, wouldn't they? They would have been looking at thinking, oh no, you know, look how many goals they're scoring. Look at this. They beat us 3-0 at the start of the season. This is, you know, what we're going to look at. But we've got new faces. There's optimism around. They seem to really enjoy themselves last week as well, which hasn't always been the case lately. And like I say, back-to-back wins. I know one was in the cup, but still, it's confidence. We've got a goalkeeper who's got back-to-back clean sheets, still not been beaten, not been tested amazingly. But for him, in his confidence, you know, he's got them, like I say, back-to-back clean sheets. So, yeah, I'm confident that we will go out there, positive frame of mind. The crowd is going to be massive. We need the crowd behind us from minute one. Similar to how we were against West Brom, they'll need our support, and I'm sure that, you know, they'll get it from early on. And it's down to sort of the players to keep the fans engaged, and the fans to keep the players, you know, backing them and giving that, you know, the 12th man that we were famous for once upon a time.
Yeah, because let's be honest, mate. We haven't even had five men, never mind bloody 12th man. I mean, it's been a dreadful atmosphere all bloody season. And it has been very much turn up, and it's down to the players to turn the fans on. I think that's been, which, you know, there's an element of that, which is fair enough. But I still think the fans haven't been great, and people haven't been turning up in their numbers, unfortunately, either. Again, finances probably have a lot of things to play with that. We're in a different world now. Everything's tight. Energy's going up, etc. You know, people's circumstances have changed, so I'm not criticising in any way. I'm just saying that those who do turn up, because they can, just speak up. Because as you rightly point out, mate, for games like this, it could make all the difference. And Christ, you know, how we've just beaten Hull. If we can beat Fulham, and then if we can beat Coventry, that puts us firmly in them playoffs. And with momentum, with winnable, in theory, games coming up. So it could be the start of a good run, this could now. If we just get a little bit of luck and a little bit of fortune and good play, integrate these players, we could somehow, not somehow, but we could very much start to cement a bit more of a playoff push. So, yeah, interesting.
I mean, obviously, you said your prediction there. I mean, you did you say 1-0 you're going for? Now I'm going for
1-0. Yeah, I think we're going to sneak it.
Well, let's have a listen to what Graham McGarry thinks.
Hi there, you Potters podcast people. Hello there, it's Graham McGarry back again after the international break. I hope you enjoyed your little breather from your football. This is Graham McGarry with that Potters prediction. Let's hope we get it right this weekend. Stoke City 2, Hull City 0. Stoke 1, West Brom 0. Stoke are ready to win at home. 2-0 for the Potters. Hello there once again, you Potters predictors, having a listen to see what I'm going to go for this weekend. It's Graham McGarry once again with the Stoke City prediction. Well, we didn't get it exactly right last weekend against Hull City, but we did predict a Potters win. Now, the metal and acid test is coming this weekend when the league leaders and goal-scoring informed Fulham are coming to the Bet365 stadium. It's been a long time since those Stoke City fans have witnessed a home win in the league. Well, it could be a cunting buster this weekend because I think Stoke are geared up, in form, got some confidence to go and take on the league leaders. Tight affair, but a Potter's home win. That might surprise a few of you. Stoke City 1, Fulham 0.
Oh, so now we know who's been listening to Graham McGarry's prediction before they come on here, don't we?
I think Graham really, I think he's copied off me, let's be honest.
Ever so predictable, Michael, ever so predictable.
Well, you see, now with Graham's track record, you would think I don't want to really follow what Graham says. He got one right the other week of 2-0. I thought, he's back on the march now, and he goes 2-1. So we got the actual result right, but he didn't get the scoreline right. So, no. I think Graham's copied me this week because he's thinking I need to follow the person who knows what he's talking about, basically. So yeah, sorry, Graham.
But yeah, it's nice to have a full house of positivity there, aren't we? We're not going to concede. Not obviously we're going to concede, and we're going to win. But yeah, fantastic. I mean, obviously we've got the results there, but I mean, how are we going to do that then? You know what? What's the game plan, Mike? How are you getting your 1-0 win?
You know what? We get the 1-0 win by not sitting back. I think the worst thing we can do is just invite Fulham onto us. So for me, I want us to approach it with the same team as we did against Hull. I think to drop anyone really would be very, very harsh. The only exception to that is if, of course, Nick Powell's back. Now, I've heard nothing recently about it, but didn't O'Neill kind of say he was back in training, back on the grass, etc.? There is an outside chance that he might be able to play. Maybe he'll be on the bench, you never know. But I think that's probably the only exception I'd say, mate. Otherwise, I want us to keep exactly the same team. Even bloody James Chester gets to stay.
Cool. Okay. So you're keeping Chester in. No recall for Fox. No, Chester's
no, because Fox didn't do very much in the last few games. I was all for giving him a chance, and he's had his chance. But he, you know, the games at home, I was trying to think back to, I think it was Derby. The games at home, he was out of position. He was at fault for the goals. Yeah, I don't think he's taking his chance personally, mate. And it wouldn't overly surprise me again to see him leave in the summer.
That's fair enough. And so you're saying, you know, if Nick Powell is, by the good grace, you know, available, who is he playing? Who is he coming in for? Is it Tom Ince dropping out for you?
Oh, it'd be so harsh to drop Ince, wouldn't it? I can't believe I'm saying that. That's ridiculous. You know what? I think we might have to change the midfield around a little bit. Maybe dropping Klukas potentially and moving around this way. I'd have to probably have a bit more of a think about that one, to be honest, Dan. But you can't drop Wright Phillips. Maybe drop Brown, move Wright Phillips further out, have Ince on the left, and then maybe bring Powell in to the role that basically Wright Phillips was playing against Hull. Maybe that's a way of doing it. Because I must admit, I know we've talked about Jacob, and you know, I've got nothing to really say too bad about him. But for me, again, Jacob's not really done very much in the last few games. So I've got no qualms with him being dropped.
So let me get this right. You're going to put Nick Powell up front. And you're going to have Wright Phillips playing where?
Wright Phillips on the right, Ince on the left.
So you're going with the three. And then you're going to have your two centre midfielders, right? Allen and Klukas, with your two wing-backs and three centre-halves.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if Mario is fit. It doesn't sound like he might be. So, yeah. Okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'd like to see, just because of his pedigree, Lewis Baker start. I don't know if he's got 90 minutes in him, but I'd like to see him come on and, you know, and start just because of the pressure. I think people are like Harry Wilson and stuff around the edge of the box. If he can sort of, you know, just stay tight to him and not give him the opportunities there, I think that will really benefit us and really help us, you know, trying to get a positive result and keep them quiet. Like I say, who do you drop though? Because, I mean, you would say, like, Ince would probably be the one on paper to go, as he's more of a flair player there. You know, if you're trying to go for more of a workman-like midfield and sort of, you know, get the ball forward quickly. But at the same time, I don't think he can drop it. I think his effort, I think he's benefiting loads from playing more on the central. I said to me, is he now showing this form because he's involved in the game? On the right wing, he can sort of hide a bit, and if he doesn't see the ball for a few minutes, gets a bit sort of switches off a bit, gets a bit disinterested. Maybe he's not on his toes. Whereas when he's in the middle, the ball's there so much more for him. He's always involved and he's always got a job as well. Even if we haven't got the ball, he's got a job in the midfield and he's looking so much better for it, isn't he? So
yes, mate.
I would say his energy, actually, which amazing to say, Tom Ince's energy keeps him in the team.
I can't believe we're saying it. You know, a couple months ago, we would have been laughed out the building for thinking that.
Yeah. But yeah, Tom Ince's, I mean, I loved the comments after the game from Dean Holden as well. He said, didn't he? He said, Ince is the best trainer at the club, whether he's in the team, out of the team, whatever. He says he always gives 100%. He's, you know, he said he just hasn't always transferred that to a match day and maybe sort of clammed up a bit on match days. I'd keep him in there. I'd like to see Baker in there. And I think, yeah, Alan's got to play as well, hasn't he? So then three will be the midfield. Is what, sorry?
Did you say you're dropping Klukas then?
Yeah, to me, Klukas. I mean, he had a really good game last week. But I've got doubts whether Baker will be able to do 90 minutes or whether Ince will be able to keep up high energy for 90 minutes. And if we've got Klukas on the bench and maybe Jordan Thompson might be back, he could be on the bench. You know, I'm sure he's out of his COVID sort of isolation and that now. Yeah. As long as he's, you know, not affecting him too much, then he'll be back. And we've got two fresh set of legs there who can come on and give, you know, say to Tom Ince, say to Baker, whoever, you know, give me 60 minutes, give me 70 minutes, run, you know, chase, Harry, press, be physical, bash, you know, do what you need to do. And we've got fresh legs here on the bench who can come in and, you know, finish the game off once you've, you know, you've given all you can give. Up front as well, I think you're not going to, I think Wright Phillips, he's at the minute. He's got that. Fulham won't know much about him, will they? They won't have seen much. They won't. You know, and he's got that. He's man of the match last week. He was buzzing. You saw that little clip, didn't we, of his face when he's, you know, going to his, walking past his dad with his man of the match awards. If he couldn't, like, barely believe it, could he? He was like, look what I've got. Oh, my God. So that was lovely to see. I think he's going to be buzzing at the minute. He's full of confidence. He's like I say, Fulham is not going to be known to them very well as well. So I'd leave him in, tell him just go out and just play. Just play how you did. Make yourself a nuisance. Take people on. Scare. Run at people. Scare them. Push them back. Because there are, you know, we've just been saying that we, you know, Birmingham scored two, Bristol City scored two. There are gaps. There's going to be gaps. There's going to be chances with this Fulham team. And if they play how they have been doing. And I'd say, who's going to be partnering him though? Is it Brown? Do you bring Fletcher in to try and give you more of a focal point to sort of, you know, play off him and stuff? Because, I mean, Stephen Fletcher, we know, we've seen how good he links up with Brown, how good he links up with Campbell. I think he'd love playing with somebody like Wright Phillips.
Yeah, yeah, he could probably learn a lot from Fletcher as well, you know, in terms of experience, etc. So, yeah, I got no problems with bringing Fletcher. It's going to need to... I don't want us to play long ball by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's going to have to stick up there when it gets there, to be honest. Because if they're putting a lot of pressure on us, you know, we could be quite deep at times, and I think we need someone to hold that ball up while the midfield catch up. So, yeah, I would definitely probably agree with you about Fletcher, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I think just Fletcher's got that... He doesn't always spring to people's minds, but he's got quite a lot of flair in his game, and he's got a really inventive footballing brain as well, and like his little flicks and his tricks, his back heels and stuff. And if Wright Phillips is buzzing about and stuff, I think them two can link up really well.
Time will tell, my friend. Time will tell.
So, yeah, that's what we think, Mike, me and you. But we've also been in contact with Tom from the Fulham Supporters Trust. You remember, he spoke to him earlier on the season. Well, he's back and he's given us a lowdown on this game from the Fulham end.
This game comes when Fulham are in pretty good form, 19 goals in our last three games. But, you know, that comes on the back of a period before that where we played... five games, only scored three goals and only got 4 points. So which Fulham turns up, I think, will be interesting. We had a lot of games off over Christmas and I think the break has done us good. But then we've played two games a week and this will be for 2 weeks since then. And there were a few signs of fatigue showing a little bit towards the end on Tuesday. So that might have an impact on how well equipped we are to play Stoke on Saturday. I'm expecting a much tougher game. You know, we've been quite fortunate in a way that we've played three of the teams in the worst form in the Championship successively and managed to score a lot of goals. We've also scored a lot more goals than expected goals chances would suggest, so maybe our luck's been in a little bit. But having said that, Tom Kearney is back in the team with Jean-Michel Seri playing in the African Cup of Nations, and he's looking like the player he was so good in the Championship 2 and 3 years ago. Carvalho, who's burst onto the scene this season, the last couple of games has been really immense. And there's always the goal threat with Mitrovic and the clever feet of Wilson. Defensively, you know, he went behind to Bristol City twice. Birmingham came back into the game on Tuesday with a couple of goals, so a bit suspect. So against a much more organised side, I think, in Stoke, I think we'll find that it's a much harder test than the last few games have been. And he can't win every game. So I think this will be a really interesting game on Saturday. A bit like the first game at Craven Cottage was billed at that point as a top-of-the-table clash between two of the teams that started the season well. The fortunes might not have gone quite the same since then, but I do think that we're a much better matched contest than our most recent games, and it should be a good one.
Cheers, Tom. Thank you very much for that. It's always nice to see, nice to hear, should I say, you know, the opposition's feelings going into a game and that. And are we going to get 3 points, Mike? We all think we are.
We will do, mate. I think Fulham will probably come here potentially underestimating us, mate, to be honest. So I think we're going to catch them on a good day and we're going to get three more points, mate. And then we'll go to Coventry and secure another three and we'll be in the playoffs.
So that's your thing. This time next week we'll be in the playoffs.
This time next week we'll be millionaires.
And on that note, I think it's going to say good night, everybody. Good afternoon, whichever. And I'll see you next week.
Night, mate.